Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
Happy Monday. Happy President's Day, everyone. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Daniel Foster, news editor at National Review Online. And for Jim Garrity today, we've got actually two good martinis today and one bad to start off your week on a positive note. The good martini, Dan, actually comes from Bob Woodward, someone we don't necessarily assume will always bring us good news, but he certainly did on Fox News Sunday. One of the topics that came up for the panel, and he was a member of the panel, was the lingering nomination of Chuck Hagel. Senate Republicans successfully filibustered the nomination for now, although most of them assume and admit that it'll probably pass in a couple of weeks. But maybe not, according to what Woodward has said, because here's Woodward explaining that Senate Democrats are now getting pretty wobbly on this.
What are Democratic senators really thinking about the Hagel nomination? I understand some of them have actually called the White House and said, is Hagel going to withdraw? Would he consider withdrawing? The answer is an emphatic no, but I wonder whether the Democrats are kind of looking and asking what really is the fundamental question here. Is he the best person to be Secretary of Defense?
And if they're asking if he's about to withdraw, I'm guessing some of them are coming to the conclusion that the answer to that last question is no, he is not the best choice. So, Dan, still we don't have any Democrats leaving the boat on this one, so it still looks like if you had to bet that he would probably get confirmed, but the support is getting weaker and weaker, it seems.
I'll admit I've been all over the place on Hagel's prospects. When his name was first floated, I thought, you know, there's no way that the administration's going to follow through on this. The backlash was so swift. This flurry of all these old quotes and speeches and interviews and C-SPAN segments coming out was so expertly done, and there was so much opposition to Hagel that I didn't even think Obama was going to follow through and nominate him. When he did, I thought, you know, it would be unprecedented to filibuster, and especially when Schumer came out and a couple other key Democrats came out and said they were going to stand behind him. I thought, you know, yeah, I'll probably get it. But now I don't know what to think. I mean, I still think he'll probably get it. And I was a little annoyed at this kind of faux filibuster of Hagel because, you know, I didn't see the point of it. As I joked at the time, if Hagel turns out to be a disaster of a Secretary of Defense, it's not a great defense for Senate Republicans to say, well, look, we you know, held our ground and stood the line on a brief delay in his confirmation. And I do think I should say this. I have pretty strong feelings about the guy. I'll give a president broad leeway, not that he's asking my permission, to nominate, you know, the person who he thinks is going to administer his policies best. You know, the president should have that leeway. But I really do think Hagel's ceiling, not his floor, his ceiling is going to be ineffectual, bumbling guy, probably hated by everybody in the Pentagon. I just think he's going to be a disaster and potentially be much worse than that. So, you know, I still think he's probably going to get in. But if the point of the filibuster, some folks I talked to suggested, if the point of this delaying filibuster was to just kind of slow down what little momentum he has left, give some time for rot to set in to the nomination, maybe for some new information to come out, then I guess it will have been worth it. And Woodward's report here kind of, you know, suggests that maybe there is a counter movement brewing, something bubbling up. I still think he'll probably get in, which is bad news for the country, but interesting tidbits from Woodward, which is often the case.
Obviously, plenty of troubling policy positions and statements over the years, but just in the confirmation process, his horrific bumbling performance before the committee and the fact that he is apparently very reluctant to release information on honorarium or and who's been paying him to give speeches during his time since he left the Senate. Pretty troubling stuff, in addition to the fact that, you know, he's obviously been saying some pretty awful things about Israel, and he's only added to his criticism, not deflected it over the last few weeks. On to martini number two now. And Dan, one of the things that it seems that there is some sort of bipartisan momentum on, and not necessarily good news for conservatives, but it's immigration reform. We got the Gang of Eight, but we'll see how long Rubio hangs on, as long as he's insisting on enforcement triggers before we get onto the pathway to citizenship. Now the Obama administration has, quote unquote, leaked its version of immigration reform to the USA Today newspaper, and it has nothing about border security in there. It also says 8 years you can get fully legal in this country. So we can see that their rhetoric about border security is pretty hollow, and it's obvious that they're trying to make sure that the Chuck Schumer, Dick Durbin version of immigration reform is the most conservative result of this negotiation.
Right. And you got David Axelrod even saying that he bets the White House regrets having, quote unquote, leaked this plan or disseminated it so widely around the executive that it got out. Yeah, I mean, I have very mixed feelings about the Rubio framework and the, you know, let alone the, you know, there's like 11 different versions of it. There's the Rubio framework. There's the thing that Rubio put out that Schumer and Durbin and Menendez also gave their thumbs up to, which is a little bit weaker. And then there's, you know, the Obama plan, which is far weaker still. I think they all have their problems. And the president's been funny on this because if you recall, the way this whole ball got rolling is that the gang of however many of them there were, I think it was the gang of six, but there were only five there or something like that. They came out and, you know, announced their immigration principles. And then the president rushed out to Vegas the next day and said, wait, me too, me too. And he's been trying to kind of preempt the Senate process, you know, the whole time. It's funny is he always complains about how little can get done in Congress and how little bipartisanship there is in Congress. Now, here you have, like you said, might not be good news for conservatives, but you have a massively building momentum, bipartisan momentum, to do something in the United States Senate of all places. And the president is falling all over himself to screw it up. You know, he can't wait to interject and short-circuit the process. So I don't want to hear him complaining about things that can't get done in Congress anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point, absolutely. Anyway, on to a lighthearted third martini, which is good more than crazy. In fact, it's so good that it's, you know, appropriate for today, which is President's Day. And we're going to have nice things to say here, at least momentarily, about Virginia Democratic Senator Mark Warner, who is tired of this very bland sort of President's Day holiday that we celebrate and go back to what it always was, which is Washington's birthday, February 22nd. He would not make it on a Monday. It would be February 22nd, no matter which day of the week that fell on. Dan, I think this is great, especially because Warner says it's a great opportunity for people to learn about Washington. And at a time when political correctness is totally watering down the greatness of American history, a little more focus on the original George W. would be fabulous.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, and I think there are problems, you know, that a lot of conservatives share with. I'm a little more Hamiltonian than some of my colleagues at the at National Review about when it comes to the regality of presidents. I like a little pomp and circumstance. I'm a bit of a royalist there, but I do have a problem with this idea of a presidency because I don't think that we owe you know, Franklin Pierce the same reverence that we owe George Washington. And the great thing, you know, I think this is a really interesting topic and kind of gets at who you are as who we are as Americans and how we feel about our leaders. But I think the great thing about celebrating Washington's birthday is that Washington would have thought it was ridiculous. You know, and the reason that we revere Washington so much is because he refused a crown, because he walked away after 8 years, you know, unlike Franklin Roosevelt. And, and you know, because he was the guy, he was the man who wouldn't be king, not the man who couldn't be king. That's the great distinction that set the American experiment off, you know, on such an interesting course. I mean, here's this conquering general at the end of a successful revolution, and he couldn't have been more modest in the execution of his power, more against overwrought pomp and circumstances attaching to the office of the presidency. And he really set an example that most, not all, but most of the next 42 men who occupied the office followed. So I have no problem, and I think I agree with you. It would be great if we went back to celebrating Washington's birthday. And it's good news, you know, too, that because you said political correctness, and certainly political correctness is still a problem, but remember how bad political correctness was in the mid-90s in the Clinton era? So I think this, like what we've seen happen to that debate, where now we're a little bit freer to say certain things or at least push back on some of the overdone political correctness. This, you know, this move from Warner shows that things aren't necessarily just heading in the direction of the stupid and the watered down, that sometimes we can move back to an era of relatively more sanity. So I'd be happy to see that happen.
I think so too, and I hope there's a second clause in the legislation that he brings forward to ban dancing presidents from furniture stores. I still endorse the sales. I think that, you know, you want to let the free market reign as much as you can, but a little dignity. I don't need to see Abe Lincoln, you know, going crazy over 50% off on a sofa.
Those deals are unbeatable, and you know it, Greg. Emancipate your wallet.
Oh, he'd be so proud. He'd be so proud. Dan, great as always to have you with us. We'll talk to you later in the week.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Daniel Foster of National Review Online in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back tomorrow. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.